Hey, this is Dr. David Jockers today, and I am talking about how to improve vagal tone for better mental and emotional energy. And so the vagus nerve is cranial nerve 10, and vagus is actually a Latin word for wandering. And that's because this nerve actually travels from the brainstem all the way down into our major organ system, our viscera. So it has a lot of different functions. It helps suppress inflammation via the cholinergic anti-inflammatory pathway. It helps decrease heart rate. So it helps kind of like a brake on the heart rate, helps improve the tone of the vascular system. So the tone would be the kind of the muscular activity, its ability to be elastic, to, you know, increase, decrease blood pressure. In general, it has more of a parasympathetic tone to it, the vagus nerve. It's part of the parasympathetic nervous system. And I'm going to talk a lot more about what that means. But basically, it helps relax the blood vessels more so than constrict them. And it helps increase gastric juices. So that means stomach acid, bile, pancreatic enzymes. If you've been listening to me for any period of time, you know I'm huge on making sure we get enough stomach acid production. This is a really big issue when it comes to our digestion. We know that our stomach acid needs to be in a very tight pH range. So at rest, it's usually around 3 to 3.5. Neutral pH is around 7. 7 is neutral pH. So it's very acidic even at rest. But if we're going to break down protein, like if we eat a steak, we need to get that stomach acid down around 1.5 to 2.2. So the jump from 3 down to, you know, 1.5 to 2.2 is actually very energy demanding. And it depends on activation of the vagus nerve to activate the stomach and the parietal cells in the stomach to produce the stomach acid. So very important for that. Also very important for bile production to emulsify fats, to be antimicrobial in the small intestine, to help with nutrient absorption, as well as pancreatic enzymes. So very important for gut health is having good vagal tone. Liver health, it helps regulate insulin secretion, which is more of a kind of a pancreatic function, but also helps regulate glucose homeostasis in the liver. So the liver is a main area where we have stored sugar. So if our blood sugar goes down, we're able to increase our blood sugar by breaking down stored glycogen, stored sugar in the liver. And so the vagus nerve helps play a role in regulating that. So we don't break down too much. We don't break down too little. For some individuals, they break down too much because they have poor vagal tone. So they actually increase their blood sugar too much, between meals as their body is breaking down and creating something called gluconeogenesis, where we're breaking down sugar from stored forms and their blood sugar goes up and they keep their blood sugar up too much because they have poor vagal tone. For the mouth, it has to do with taste information. And it's also very important for gag reflex, swallowing and coughing. And that's important to remember as we go forward. There's certain exercises we can do to help improve vagal tone, utilizing some of these reflexes. Blood vessels, again, helps decrease vascular tone, kind of helps monitor that vascular tone and lower blood pressure, helps keep anxiety and depression at bay. It opposes the sympathetic response to stress. And that's an important thing to remember. So healthy vagal tone, it means that we are in a calm and peaceful mindset and mood. We have good digestion and good bowel movements. We have a healthy pulse rate, healthy blood pressure, healthy blood sugar, and healthy body weight. And we have normal speech and swallowing ability. If we have all those things, we're feeling very calm, very joyful. We have good sleep as well. It's not on this, but vagal activity is important for good, really deep restorative sleep, as well as good digestion and bowel movements, good pulse rate. So pulse isn't too high. It's not too low. Good blood pressure. A lot of people, you know, think they have good blood pressure, but it's actually too low. And that's a sign that we may have too strong a parasympathetic tone. And I'm going to go through that here shortly as well. And then healthy blood sugar and body weight. So when we have poor vagal tone, we might have episodes of hypoglycemia where our blood sugar just drops too low. We get hangry, irritable, have major cravings, you know, different issues like that. Or we might have too high blood sugar and have hyperglycemia and high insulin and insulin resistance and excess visceral fat. So all these things are important to remember: normal speech, swallowing ability. Again, that activation of the palate and the larynx, very important for vagal. That's a very important vagal function. So that's important as well. You'll find some people that they have trouble swallowing pills, for example, or they have a heightened gag reflex, where it's like a lot of things just make them gag. The texture of certain foods makes them gag. They can't swallow certain things. That could be a sign of poor vagal tone. So all good things to remember. And we're looking at the nervous system. You know, for forever, we've broken it down into really like two major parts of what we call our autonomic nervous system. Autonomic means automatic, right? It's like the part of our nervous system that we don't have to think about. We don't have to think about our body digesting food. We don't have to think about our heart rate, you know, our lungs taking in and exchanging oxygen and carbon dioxide. We don't think about these things, but it's all being done, and that's being done by that automatic part of our nervous system. Parasympathetic is kind of like the brakes. Sympathetic is the gas, right? It's the fight or flight. It's survival. It's activation. When we exercise, we're activating our sympathetic nervous system. When we're feeling a lot of pressure under stress, somebody cuts us off on the road, we feel at risk, we feel scared. That's all going to be sympathetic nervous system activity. Parasympathetic is the brakes to that. Helps us puts us in a relaxed state. And when we're in a relaxed state, our body can actually heal, regenerate cells, and can digest food. Digesting food is very energy demanding. And so we are not putting much energy into digestion when we are in fight or flight. And an example of this is, when you were growing up, your mom probably told you, don't go swimming, wait 45 minutes after you eat before you go swimming. Why is that? Because if you went swimming right after you ate a big meal, you would get a cramp. And that's because swimming or any sort of, exercise is sympathetic driven. And that brings oxygen, nutrients, blood flow to these skeletal muscles and away from the digestive tract. When we eat a meal, we need to get the blood flow and the activation into our digestive tract so we can produce enough stomach acid, bile, pancreatic enzymes, so we can really break down, digest that meal. And so children usually can go through that process pretty quick. So that's why 45 minutes, it would eat a meal, 45 minutes, it would get out of the stomach, into the small intestine. We'd have released the majority, if not all, of the digestive juices needed to break down that meal. And we wouldn't need to have the vagal nerve activity. And therefore, we can now get into sympathetic mode where we're, doing some sort of exercise. For adults, oftentimes, we've got to wait a few hours. I know for myself, if I ate a big meal, 45 minutes would not be enough before I go and swim. So usually I try to do that several hours between meals, to make sure that I've gotten all the parasympathetic tone that I need to digest the meal well and then go into sympathetic mode. And this is also why I like to exercise on an empty stomach, typically fully fasted for, a long time. Oftentimes I'll work out around midday and I haven't eaten since, dinner the night before. And I feel really good because, I don't need to have the parasympathetic tone. I can have the activated sympathetic tone, get a great workout in, and then, shortly after I finish working out, eat. And while I'm eating, be in a more relaxed state and do things that are not, overly stressful after I eat. So that way I can really focus my physiology can focus on parasympathetic dominance and producing the digestive juices I need to really digest my meal effectively. So that's important to remember. And this is a great quote from Dr. Bruce Lipton. You can't be in growth and protection at the same time. So parasympathetic is about growth. Sympathetic is about protection, right? So it's important. Now, to add a little bit of a confounding factor, there's something called the polyvagal theory. It's a little bit, it advances this idea of fight or flight versus rest and digest. And it breaks the vagal tone into two major systems. We have the ventral vagal nerve, which is ventral basically means in a physiology perspective, it's kind of the front part of the vagus nerve has to do more with being engaged, grounded, compassionate, mindful. It's kind of the state of thriving. Sympathetic nervous system, again, super important, really key for adapting to stress, right? Adapting to stress, exercise, moving our body quickly. We need higher amounts of blood sugar because we need quick energy. We may not have the presence of oxygen because we have to move quickly. We need to be able to react quickly. So sometimes, fight or flight, you're thinking anger, some of these more aggressive behaviors. And that's normal when we're in sympathetic nervous system activity. It gives us a competitive drive oftentimes, but we should only be in that sympathetic activation for short periods of time. We shouldn't be in there for very long, just short periods of time, like if we're exercising or if we're adapting to a sudden stressor, and then we're able to move out of that and hopefully back into parasympathetic tone. If we don't, if we're in that sympathetic fight or flight for a long period of time, eventually our body moves into the dorsal portion of the vagus nerve. The unmyelinated myelination is where we have these myelin sheaths around the nervous system, and that helps conduct stronger, faster neurological activity. So the unmyelinated portion of the vagus nerve is the part associated with shutdown and gives us kind of like a numb, depressed, hopeless, disassociated response. So when somebody hits a point of depression, typically their body has been in a state of fight or flight for a longer period of time than they should. They've kind of hit their point of, you know, overloading their system. And now they've moved into this state of shutdown, or the dorsal portion of the vagus nerve, which is kind of like a hibernation type of mode, right? It's like, which just kind of wants us to rest. I mean, think about it like when you have the flu or something like that. You know, you really can't think straight. You just kind of want to rest, relax your body, you're not feeling your best, right? So it's kind of your system's overloaded. Well, some people are like that when they don't have the flu. They've been in fight or flight for so long that now they have hit the shutdown portion. So this is another slide here that helps us understand this. So the ventral vagal activation, kind of your attitude is, I'm feeling at ease and can manage whatever comes my way. I feel empowered and connected. I see the big picture and connect to the world and people in it. This is really a state of thriving. And that's where we want to be most of the time. We're not going to always be there. Certainly we need sympathetic activation at times. And in fact, actually can be very healthy, but we want to glide between the ventral vagal activation and sympathetic activation for short periods of time. And as much as possible, we want to avoid dorsal vagal activation. Most people experience some level of dorsal vagal activation at times during very stressful seasons of their life, but hopefully it's just for a very short period and we're able to get back into, you know, the state of ventral vagal activation and thriving. So again, the sympathetic activation, the attitude is, I'm getting overwhelmed and having a hard time keeping up. I feel anxious and irritated. The world seems dangerous, chaotic, and unfriendly. And then, you know, again, hopefully we get that balanced and get into ventral vagal activation. If not, we move into the dorsal vagal activation, which is the attitude of, I'm buried under a huge load and I cannot get out. I'm alone in my despair. The world is empty, dead, and dark. And we've probably all experienced people that unfortunately are in this position, maybe ourselves at times. And really, you know, it's super important that we're doing exercises to help activate proper vagal tone and move us back into ventral vagal activation. So again, you know, the state of thriving is kind of this continuous flux where we get a little bit of sympathetic activation back into parasympathetic, a little bit of sympathetic back into parasympathetic. When we have high levels of sympathetic, we start moving up, you know, and when it's present for an extended period of time, we move into that dorsal activation where it's more of a freeze, right? So we're kind of body collapse, immobility. We're not able to really cope with the stress that we're under. It's a burnout, it's a state of burnout. It's not a good place, right? It's a low endorphin place where we don't have the endorphins. We have, increased pain threat, you know, increased pain in our system, and just we're not able to function at our best. And so hopefully, you know, we're able to get and maintain in that ventral vagal state. And that's what we're looking for. So yeah, I mentioned how the vagus nerve plays a really key role in this kind of gut brain axis, this communication pattern. So the gut is constantly communicating to the brain. The brain is constantly communicating to the gut. The major nerve that's leading that is the vagus nerve. It's the communication, bidirectional communication pathway between the gut and between the brain. It helps activate motility, sort of moving feces through. And it's the different neurotransmitters that are being produced in the gut interact with the vagus nerve, giving the brain signals as far as what's happening there in the gut. And this is why we call the gut the second brain. There's a lot of neurotransmitters in there, lots of sensory information that's taking place, motor activity that's taking place, and it's all feedback into the brain through that vagus, through the sensory system of the vagus. And then, of course, the vagus also has the motor end that's helping activate the gut as well. So whatever's happening in the gut is going to really dramatically impact vagal tone. Now, major causes of poor vagal tone, chronic stress and poor sleep, really big in our society. Early childhood traumatic experiences. Most people that are experiencing this dorsal vagal activity typically have had some major traumatic experiences, maybe, you know, sexual or physical abuse when they were young. And so that's really unfortunate, but that's a major contributor. Head injuries, concussions, things like that definitely will throw off vagal tone. Poor breathing mechanics, poor posture, poor breathing mechanics play a big role. The way we breathe helps to activate or deactivate parasympathetic activity, vagal activity. Chronic infections, you know, we talked about the gut brain. So chronic infections, most of the time in the gut, will impact vagal tone as well. Blood sugar imbalances, we talked about how important vagal tone is for keeping blood sugar stable. So for eating foods that cause major blood sugar imbalances, that's going to throw off, it's going to overload the vagal activity and to try to balance it, and can cause poor vagal tone. And then high toxic load, toxins, neurotoxins, mycotoxins, so heavy metals, pesticides, herbicides, mold, and mycotoxins all dramatically impact vagal nerve activity. Now, a couple tests we can do for vagal tone. One is called the pupillary constriction test. So when a light is shine in the eyes, the pupil should constrict for at least 10 seconds for dilating. So constricting would mean shrink, and should hold for at least 10 seconds before it kind of gives out and then dilates, meaning that the pupil gets bigger, right? So it gets smaller, holds, and then it will get bigger. If it constricts, so if it gets smaller and then dilates in less than 10 seconds, or it fails to constrict, doesn't even constrict at all, could be a sign of poor vagal tone. So when somebody has heightened sympathetic activity, oftentimes it will constrict, but it will give out after a few, you know, 4, 5, 6 seconds. You'll just see it pulsating and then boom, give out. When somebody is in that dorsal vagal tone, right? When they're dorsal dominated ventral activity. So they're, you know, in that state of burnout, oftentimes it won't even constrict, or it will constrict and blow out right away and just dilate right away. Now, second thing is heart rate to breath rate comparison. So, and for the pupillary constriction test, really you just take like a little pen light, you're kind of shining it near the person's eyes, and it's mildly irritating, right? It's irritating kind of the eye, but should be able to hold that for about 10 seconds. So that's kind of the standard there. Heart rate to breath rate comparison. Normal heart rate is 60 to 100 beats per minute. Normal breath rate is 12 to 20 breaths per minute. This is roughly a 5-to-1 ratio. The ratio is more than 5-to-1. So if the heart rate is up higher than the breath rate, it could be a sign of poor vagal tone. So let's say your heart rate is 80 and your breath rate is 12, right? That ratio would be more than 5-to-1. So your heart rate's just, it's much higher than it should be for the amount of breaths you're taking. That's a sign of poor vagal tone. Heart rate variability. This is something you can do. Like there's certain tests. There's also like kind of things that you can wear, like the Oura Ring, things like that, that will tell you your heart rate variability. And that's the variance between heartbeats. It can be measured on various wearable devices. Blood pressure. Normal blood pressure level should be between 100 at the top. So systolic should be 100 to 140. Over 70 to 90 diastolic. If this is abnormally high or low, it can be an indication of poor vagal tone. So if your blood pressure is 160 over 100, right, could be poor vagal tone. Obviously, inflammation plays a role in that. Now this, you know, it should be a resting blood pressure, not like a blood pressure you're taking when you're exercising. Then it should be up higher. For a lot of people, and like for me, I know when I had irritable bowel, and I was dealing with HPA axis dysfunction, my blood pressure would regularly be somewhere around like 100 or like 90 over 50. It was really, really low. And that was a sign that I was not getting the sympathetic activation. So I was actually in a dorsal vagal activity, right? Which is not where we want to be. So it wasn't a place where I could heal. And that's because I had gut infections. I was living in a home with mold and mycotoxins, and it was wearing down my system. I was back in my early 20s. Orthostatic hypotension. This is another thing we can check. This is when blood pressure doesn't rise quick enough when an individual goes from sitting to standing, which can result in feelings of dizziness and poor balance. This is pretty easy to see. I mean, you can test blood pressure, but really it's just going from sitting to standing. So you sit, you stand up, you sit for 5 minutes, let's say, then you go ahead and you stand up. You should feel fine. You should be able to stand up, experience no issue, just go right into whatever you want to do next. If you feel dizzy and it's hard to maintain your balance, that's a sign of orthostatic hypotension. You're not getting the vagal activity enough to get the blood pressure to regulate and get more blood flow up into the brain. So that's an issue. So let's look at some solutions. The importance of intentional breathing. This is a great quote by Sheldon Henler, MD, PhD. He wrote the book called The Oxygen Breakthrough. He says, breathing is the first place, not the last place one should investigate when any disordered energy presents itself. So it's super important. We know slow, deep breathing can trigger a relaxation response in the body that slows the heart and reduces stress. Breathing through the nose or nasal breathing filters the air, is better for oxygen uptake, actually increases nasal nitric oxygen, which helps dilate the blood vessels in the brain. Very, very key for overall neurological activity. The exhale, which slows the heart rate, should be longer than the inhale. So we should actually be taking longer exhalations than inhalations. We should keep our shoulders as relaxed as possible. The neck and shoulder muscles shouldn't be part of the breathing process. Take a bigger breath by forcing your abdomen to expand. As the diaphragm extends, it pushes your ribs out. So just good breathing form in general can make a big difference. Being a state of gratitude, right? Really refocusing your mind on gratitude is super critical for having healthy vagal tone. People who are grateful have more resilience. They're able to adapt to stress more effectively. Little things don't get to them the way they do for people that lack gratitude. For people that lack gratitude, it's almost like for many individuals, they're looking for reasons to be offended. Something happens, they get offended, and they dwell on that. And by dwelling on that, they create more stress. And so they're activating more of that sympathetic nervous system activity. And eventually, they're going to move from ventral to dorsal vagal activity and get more depressed. And so we want to really focus on gratitude as much as possible and being an individual that's grateful. And a couple tips for that is keep a daily journal of three things you're thankful for. Every day, daily journal, three things you're thankful for. Have conversations with your family or your loved ones, people that are close to you, your friends, whoever it is that's, you know, around you the most, about things that you're thankful for each day. Tell someone in your life something you appreciate about them every day, your spouse, your friends. Tell them, uplift them, encourage them. And that will help you, and that will help your, it will help activate more of your ventral vagal tone, which is that state of thriving. Silence the negative. Make an effort not to complain. Again, choose to think differently. Don't be offended. Don't look for reasons to complain. Instead, look for reasons to be grateful and thankful. Now, really focusing in on a good night's sleep is super important. So these are the things that we want to do for good sleep hygiene. One is avoid caffeine within 8 hours of sleeping. So if you're going to bed at 10, ideally, you're not consuming caffeine after, let's say, 8 p.m. Oh, sorry, after 2 p.m. So 8 hours, so it'd be 2 p.m. You don't want to eat within 3 hours of sleeping or exercise within 3 hours of sleeping because, you know, eating too late at night is going to interfere with your ability to get into a state of deep sleep and interfere with the key hormones needed for really good restorative sleep. And exercising late at night activates that sympathetic nervous system, can throw off your circadian rhythm. So you want to exercise earlier in the day. You want to get good sun exposure during the day. That actually helps set your circadian rhythm. When you get good sun exposure during the, you know, early hours or midday, that actually helps your body produce more melatonin so you can get great sleep at night. After dark, you want to avoid bright light. So you want to turn off all the bright lights in your home. Ideally just have kind of light, you know, very, very mild lighting, ideally more of like an orange light or orange bulb that's not, you know, not emitting a lot of blue light. And you can wear blue light blocking glasses as well. So if you're on screens, things like that, that emit blue light, you've got blue light blocking glasses, which are kind of orange tinted glasses that make things look more like, you know, you're in candlelight or something like that. You want to wind down at 9 p.m. So you shouldn't have goals that you're trying to accomplish after nine. You shouldn't be working, trying to have goals. You can do relaxation activities, read books, have a light conversation, listen to some music. But nothing that's going to get you really, you know, hyped up and overactivated. That's important. And then when you're going to sleep, keep your room as dark as possible. Have your room cool. I like to have an overhead fan, you know, keeping my room somewhere between 65, 70 degrees for me helps me sleep really good. And I use a sleep mask. So I have my room as dark as I can, but then I also put a sleep mask on, and that helps block out any sort of tangent light. And that's really key as well. So these are all great tips for good sleep. Make sure you're laughing. Laughing stimulates endorphins. It helps to activate more oxytocin, which balances cortisol and other stress hormones. It actually enhances creativity, so the endorphins, as well as it helps activate and improve neurotransmitter sensitivity in your brain, which can enhance creativity, boosts anti-aging hormones. So some of our major sex hormones, testosterone oftentimes can be boosted, growth hormone when we're laughing and we're kind of enjoying ourselves. And obviously we just feel significantly better. It connects us to the people around us. So that's that oxytocin effect. So laughter can be really helpful. Now, some other natural techniques for stimulating the vagus nerve. And, you know, this is going back to things we talked about with what vagal activity is doing. So singing is actually like humming, chanting, singing are all exercises that have been shown to increase heart rate variability. That's that kind of tone between each heartbeat. And that's a great measurement. That is the gold standard measurement of our vagal tone is our heart rate variability. Higher heart rate variability is linked with reduced morbidity and mortality. So reduced risk of disease and death and improved psychological well-being and quality of life. So singing can be a really great stimulus for the vagus nerve. Laughing, like I talked about, like singing, that can increase heart rate variability, particularly when it's done in a group setting. So when you're laughing with others, that actually is more beneficial than just laughing on your own, although that can be helpful as well. Gargling, so that seems interesting, like just taking water and gargling, but that actually stimulates the muscles of the palate and has been shown to improve working memory performance and vagal activity. So that can be really helpful. Deep breathing. We know breathing slowly and deeply activates vagus nerve, sends messages to the brain that help lower your blood pressure and heart rate. Cold exposure. So exposure to cold dampens the fight or flight response. So it could just be like cold water that you kind of put on your face in the morning or something like that. Could be a cold shower. Could be, you know, doing a cold immersion, cold water immersion or cryotherapy. All of those things can be really helpful for vagal tone. Exercise, just getting good regular exercise. Now, you don't want to overtrain, you don't want to do too much, but getting regular movement. So getting out, walking, getting your body moving every single day, ideally in the sun, getting sun exposure, super important as well for vagal activity and overall quality of life. But getting out and moving every day, and then also doing some resistance training a few days a week, like 3-4 days a week, lifting some weights or doing some body weight exercises to help strengthen your body. Very, very good for overall vagal tone and overall quality of life. So that can be really helpful. Thoughtful meditation and prayer, super critical. That can help calm your brain, help activate vagal tone. So things to be looking to do. Now, eating a healthy diet that is, you know, gets rid of refined grains, really all grains, all deep fried foods, all your, you know, processed foods, your grain fed meats, your fast foods, your commercial salad dressings, all the bad oils, the seed oils, corn oil, soybean, safflower, cottonseed, peanut oil, your trans fats, your partially hydrogenated oils, getting rid of those things all jack up your sympathetic nervous system. Additives, preservatives, artificial sweeteners, get rid of all that stuff. And instead focus on high protein from grass-fed, pasture-fed, pasture-raised meat, poultry, wild game, wild-caught seafood, bone broth, vegetable broth. You're getting good protein from that. Eggs, pasture-raised eggs, another good source. Get a lot of healthy fats. It's going to be your avocados, your extra virgin olive oil, your coconut oil, your grass-fed butter, all really good sources of healthy fat. And then get a lot of polyphenols. You're going to get those things from lemons, limes, berries, different fruit, non-starchy vegetables, herbs like basil, oregano, thyme, rosemary, sage, garlic, onions, chives, ginger, turmeric, all super good. And then get some fermented vegetables as well, apple cider vinegar, fermented veggies, sauerkraut, kimchi, things like that, all really good for gut health and supporting that vagal tone. So that's what we want to focus on there. Intermittent fasting can be really helpful as well. Take stress off of your system, helps to modulate your microbiome in a positive way, gets rid of excess amounts of primary feeding bacteria and helps the secondary feeders that live deep in the gut mucosa, helps them to thrive. And that's things like Akkermansia mucinophilia. Mucinophilia means mucus loving. And Akkermansia mucinophilia lives in the gut mucosa, can eat the gut mucosa. And when we are intermittent fasting, it's been shown to actually increase the quantity of the Akkermansia mucinophilia. And across the board, that has been shown to help reduce the risk of metabolic disease and really all cause chronic disease in our system. And one of the interesting things Akkermansia does is it breaks down polyphenols and converts them into something called urolithin A, for example. And urolithin A has been shown to break down bad mitochondria within the intestinal cells, within the enterocytes, and turn them into good, healthy mitochondria to create more stress-resilient gut lining and reduce inflammation in the body. So intermittent fasting, one of the best things we can do for vagal tone, gut health, keeping inflammation under control. Simple thing you can do is just an overnight 12-hour fast so you don't eat from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And then as you're experimenting, when you wake up in the morning, drink some water, drink 16, 18 ounces of water. Should be pretty easy to fast for 14 hours, going from, let's say, 7 p.m. to 9 a.m. And then you could experiment with pushing that fast out to 16 or 18 hours. And you may just do it 2 or 3 days a week. We call that crescendo or cycle fasting. And for some individuals, they just feel their best when they're fasting 16, 18 hours. So they're doing that most days. And for some individuals, they feel even better pushing that fast longer, going 19, 20 hours, maybe eating two meals in like a 4 or 5 hour eating window, or even just doing like one meal a day. And that's something you may do once a week. Like I do, a 1 day fast, a full 24 hour fast each week, 1 day. For other individuals, especially individuals that are very overweight, they actually feel, some of them feel really good just doing this on a regular basis. They only eat one or maybe like, you know, a small, you know, basically like one meal and roughly like a 1 hour eating window. For some individuals, I'll do it, you know, over like a 2 or 3 hour eating window, but it's, you know, it's just very, very compressed eating window. And there's tremendous anti-inflammatory benefits there. And there's also benefits for activating vagal tone, improving vagal tone, and improving heart rate variability when you do that. I mentioned movement, how critical that is, not only for vagal tone, but it improves circulation in general, stimulates lymphatic drainage, enhances tissue oxygenation. So it improves the oxygen extraction from the blood into the tissues of the body, balances key brain neurotransmitters, reduces stress and tension on the body. That's kind of the parasympathetic effect, helps improve mood and happiness, and enhances mental clarity and memory. So getting regular movement every day, ideally, you know, when you're able to, getting it outside is even better. And then doing some resistance training, strength training. I think that's really important as well to maintain lean body tissue. Now, a couple of other movements, just kind of focused body movements. Some people call this like yoga. Some people call it stretching, Pilates. You know, they're all components of these focused body movements, but stretching, holding certain exercise, you know, certain movements and certain poses has been shown to help calm the mind, improve focus, boost confidence, improve memory, bring happiness, promotes positive thinking, reduces headaches, improves, you know, really all points of quality of life. Everybody that does focus body movements, okay, could be Tai Chi, that's another one. Everybody that's doing this regularly, yoga, Pilates, just stretching, you know, whatever you want, whatever you want to call it, Tai Chi, whatever your form of this is, they tell me they feel significantly better. Quality of life is significantly improved. Obviously, it helps them maintain a certain amount of lean body mass, helps strengthen their core, but they're also just the brain benefits are incredible. Chiropractic care has been shown to help balance vagal tone, modulate vagal tone, and improve heart rate variability. So something I would definitely recommend. Acupuncture is another modality that can be very beneficial for vagal tone. And then magnesium. If there's one supplement I think about when I think about vagal activity, I think magnesium. When you are magnesium deficient, that is going to throw off your fight or flight response, your ability to adapt to stress, and can really put you in a bad place when it comes to vagal tone. So magnesium, we know it's really powerful for stress and anxiety. It helps balance blood sugar, stabilizes the major stress hormones like cortisol, helps improve GABA levels, which is the brakes in the brain, to help prevent against irritability, anxiety, worry, you know, all the kind of trouble thoughts, right? Depressive symptoms, helps reduce brain inflammation, improves neuroplasticity and BDNF activity, and helps detoxify heavy metals. So magnesium is really key. I love using magnesium. It's a crucial nutrient, supporting more than 300 functions in your body. Very important for good deep sleep, a calm, relaxed nervous system, pain relief, relaxed muscles, cellular energy production. So make sure you're getting a good form of magnesium and using that regularly. If you feel like you've had mood issues, you've been under stress, your brain is just not thriving, definitely get a good magnesium form. Some good forms would be magnesium malate, which is energizing, helps with metabolism, reduces muscle pain, magnesium glycinate. So magnesium basically is carried by different amino acids, right? And so glycinate would be like glycine, basically. It's relaxing, gut friendly, and good for nerve pain. Citrate is another good one. Magnesium citrate is a very common one. Relaxing, reducing muscle pain, good for kidneys. Taurate and orotate are good. They're for cardiovascular health. Chloride, magnesium chloride is good for detoxifying and good for kidneys. And the best one when it comes to vagal activity and anything related to brain health is magnesium L-threonate. And a lot of times you can find a combination, like for example, magnesium L-threonate with magnesium malate or magnesium glycinate. A lot of times you can find a combination of these, but L-threonate is the best for brain injuries. So concussions, post-traumatic stress, depression, anxiety, memory, learning, neurodegenerative disorders. Magnesium L-threonate is the way to go. Now, what you want to avoid is you want to avoid magnesium oxide unless you're trying to clear your bowels. That form is really just best as a bowel cleanser. We'll get your bowels moving. So if you're constipated, using an oxygenated form of magnesium could be really helpful. But when you are, you know, looking for brain benefits, don't use magnesium oxide, which is the most common one you'll see out in the market. So find a good form of magnesium and use that. I would recommend at least 100 milligrams of whatever, you know, form you're using, 100 to 200 at a minimum. Most people do pretty well in that 200 to 400 range. Some people need 600 milligrams or even a gram, right? And really divide your dose. Do maybe 2 to 400 milligrams at one sitting. Don't do more than that unless you're really trying to clear out your bowels. Then you can do a high dose and it will clear your bowels. But divide the dose. So do 2 or 3 times a day, somewhere around, let's say, 200 milligrams, 100, 200 milligrams, 2 to 3 times a day, and you'll see the best benefits there with that. Use adaptogenic herbs, things like ashwagandha, holy basil, rhodiola. These can all be really, really helpful. Ginseng. These sort of herbs help the body build metabolic reserve to adapt to the stressors of life. Stress pulls our body away from metabolic homeostasis, and adaptogens help bring our physiology back into a state of balance and homeostasis. So these are herbs that have adapted to significant geographical stressors. So whether it was cold temperatures, hot, very hot temperatures, lots of UV light, lots of predators, whether they were molds, fungus, bacteria, parasites, insects, they have all these different stressors that they're under and they have to adapt to those. And so they develop compounds. Some of the most well-studied are compounds called tertrapenes that have this kind of balancing effect on the physiology. They're all antimicrobial. They are all antioxidative. So they help blunt oxidative stress coming from UV light, for example. They help tone the immune system, help tone the vagal system. And when we consume them, we confer those benefits. And so these are some of the great ones. Again, ashwagandha, rhodiola, ginseng, holy basil, maca, There's a lot of really good ones. Lemon balm. So a lot of these different types of herbs can be super supportive, and you could find the ones that seem to work best for you. Passion flower is another one. Some of them are very calming, so they're better kind of in the evening. Most people notice that they feel better, they sleep better. Using things like chamomile, valerian, passion flower, lavender, lemon balm, those tend to all be more calming. Ones that tend to be a little bit more energizing would be rhodiola, ginseng, maca, Siberian ginseng, which is also called Eleuthero. Those tend to be more energizing. And then ashwagandha is more of a toning. Like it can help with energy. It can help with relaxation. So it's a really good kind of multifunctional one. Although most of them have a multifunctional component, and people respond differently. For some people, they get a lot of energy when they have rhodiola. For others, they feel more of a calming, relaxing effect in their brain. And so it just can really depend on the individual too. So, but adaptogens can be helpful, and rotating them and finding the ones that you feel like you're thriving with are really good. And then there's this great device called the Brain Tap. The Brain Tap is really powerful. It utilizes a combination of binaural beats, guided visualization. It has got lights. So these kind of blinking lights, which play a big role with actually activating certain regions of the brain. And it's all science backed, and it's been shown to help sharpen the mind, improve vagal tone, provides freedom from stress, delivers blissful sleep, keeps the brain lively and youthful. A lot of people have used this technique, this strategy, and they found it to be significantly better than counseling for post-traumatic stress, for people that, you know, for individuals that have dealt with domestic abuse, dealt with, you know, sexual abuse or physical abuse when they were young. They've really had great breakthroughs, and it's something that they can do on a daily basis at home. So it can work in conjunction with something like counseling, or it can be kind of a standalone that a lot of people have used, as long as they're using it regularly to help reshape their brain, provide neuroplasticity, and break through a lot of things that have challenged them in the past, and really maintain a high level of ventral vagal activity, high level of thriving. So another great thing to consider would be the Brain Tap device. You can check that out. In fact, if you go to drjockers.com, you just type in Brain Tap, or you type in our article on vagal tone, you'll actually find more information about the Brain Tap at the bottom of the article, and a special discounted offer for you that you can check out as well. So just check that out on drjockers.com. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this training. We went deep on vagal tone and strategies you can do to improve it. This is something we should all be thinking about and doing on a regular basis. You know, you're at some level of vagal tone. You want to constantly be at your best so you can really thrive in life. So take this to heart and share this with the people that you know and that you care about. Everybody, be blessed.